Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents...
Welcome to Creepy Kingdom, a podcast all about the spookiness and creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks and many more other creepy things that are sort of like Disney but aren't Disney, or who knows. I don't know. But what I do know is that my name is James H. Carr II, and I am the host of this very podcast that you are listening to. Coming up in this episode, in honor of the release of the live-action Beauty and the Beast film, we have another edition of our ongoing segment, Dark Origins, where we look at the dark origins of the Disney films that we have grown to love, and we will be looking back at the original versions of Beauty and the Beast. Coming up at the end of the show, I will be announcing the winner of our contest to get a $25 Disney gift card from filling out the survey that we had posted about a week ago or so. And if you didn't get a chance to fill out that survey, you still can. It's still on our website as of right now. The contest is over, but if you feel inclined to share your opinions on Creepy Kingdom and give us some feedback, we always appreciate it. You can find that by going to creepykingdom.com, clicking on the menu. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter, where every week we send an email directly to you with all the podcast episodes, videos, articles, photo reports, everything we did in a week. It's all right to your inbox. You don't have to search for it. We bring it right to you. All you need to do is sign up for that mailing list. But now, without any further ado,
let's begin.
Alrighty, I'm here with the evil queen of Creepy Kingdom, Miss Roxy Tart.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Ready to go all beast mode on this.
Uh-oh. Roxy's going beast mode on us. That means I better go beauty mode.
Wait a minute.
But yeah, I was like, you're like, wait, did I pick the wrong side?
I feel like maybe we should trade.
I don't know. You know, I want to be pretty.
All right, you can be pretty.
All right, thank you. So, but yeah, we're going to go beast mode and all that stuff. We're going to be doing another one of our ongoing series of Dark Origins. We're taking a look at Beauty and the Beast, just in time for the release of the live-action film, which should be on the day of release.
Nice.
So if you're all excited about seeing that, and you're like, oh, well, I wonder where all this came from. How did we get here? Now, we don't know if there's any crazy plot twists or changes in the live-action film, so we're really going to be talking about the 1991 comparison, when comparing it to that as in the original story.
Yeah.
Because as of this recording, neither of us have seen it.
That's all we've seen.
Yep. So, but before we get going with all of that, I do want to say, I don't know if we've mentioned it on the show or not or whatever, but let's just put it out there. I know I've had this conversation with many people, but so I was kind of on the fence about my excitement level for the live action Beauty and the Beast, and mostly just because I'm kind of on the fence about any of the films,
all of the live action ones,
and to be clear, I'm going to watch all of these movies, so I'm not on the fence whether I'm going to see them. It's just that, and I always give them a fair chance. So, you know, I could respond to the trailer and say, okay, that trailer got me excited, or it didn't really do anything to me, or do anything for me. But, I still give it a fair chance. I know some people that would just be like, I'm not interested, or I think the idea is dumb, so I won't give it a chance.
No, you're a good boy.
Yeah, I'm a good boy.
Give it a chance.
And, you know, I've been... I would say most of the stuff that Disney's put out in the past few years, I was kind of about it before I saw it, and then I really liked it. So the way that they're marketing the films are not to me. They're not going after me, clearly, because a lot of the trailers just don't do anything for me. Also, I've learned, when Beauty and the Beast first came out in 91, everyone was blown away by it. Everybody loved it. Great follow-up to The Little Mermaid. Everyone's like, Disney is back. Keep them coming, Followed up
that Disney Renaissance.
Yep, followed up with Aladdin. Yeah, everyone was all excited and good times. The use of, early use of computer animation in there on the ballroom scenes blew everybody away in 91. We were like, oh my God, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Good times. So for years, I was kind of like in my mind, like, yeah, Beauty and the Beast is awesome. And then I watched it maybe like 5 years ago or so for the first time in like a very long time. And I realized that I didn't really like it as much as I thought I did. That it was
interesting.
Yeah, it was just kind of like... And I thought about it, and I was like, it really comes down to the fact that I don't like any of the characters. I don't like Beast. I don't like Gaston. I can't go as far as say I don't like Belle, but I just wasn't really doing it. I mean, if I had to pick someone I liked, maybe Maurice is funny. I don't know. But I still don't really like his choices.
I like the Feather Duster.
Yeah. That's a great character. I meant the characters that that are driving
and the
plot.
Bimbettes. I like the Bimbettes.
Yeah, no, but I mean the main characters like that are driving the plot forward. Like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, the Bimbettes and the Feather Duster are awesome. Obviously I like stuff like that. But anyone that knows me would probably figure that out. But but I don't know, I just kind of, and then as we all grow older and everyone starts analyzing Disney films and pointing out what's wrong about them, the thing that's blatantly clear is the whole Stockholm Syndrome aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't really want to get too into those type of conversations on this show, but, it was kind of just like, I was just kind of whatever about it. I mean, I remember it was when the Blu-ray came out. So whenever that was, that was the first time I watched it in probably like 10 years. And And I think I just watched Tangled, like, like maybe even the same within the same time frame. Like for the first time, I watched Tangled, and then I watched rewatched Beauty and the Beast, and I just felt like that Tangled was such a like a far superior film as far as storytelling goes and character development and all this stuff. And I'm just like basically what might be happening is that. By comparison, what I don't like about Beauty and the Beast was kind of sticking out more.
That makes sense.
You know? So anyways, that being said, you know, when they said they're doing the live action one, I was like, all right, well, okay. I was just kind of whatever about it. Trailer came out. And I was like, it could be something. And then, you know, I saw the tea people, Chip and Mrs. Potts. I was like trying. I couldn't think of what to call the dishes. It was like the teapot and the teacup. There's the tea set. I don't know.
He saw the tea people.
The tea people, and I thought they looked cool. I don't know. Like that's, I mean, I'm seeing the film regardless. I mean, that wasn't really in question, but so I don't know. But now I'm reporting back right now. This is the first time you're hearing about this, Roxy.
Mm-hmm.
A few hours ago, I was at Disney California Adventure, and they have a extended preview of Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what it is the opening number of the movie. It's the entire opening number where she's going, Belle's going to the village, and everyone's... all the character and plot.
Everyone's being mean to her, yeah.
Yeah, it's being laid out. And I don't know how to say this. I watched that scene in live action form, and I was blown away. I was completely blown away. I was like, that was on the scale of like the Wizard of Oz and like the Sound of Music. Like that was like...
Nice.
Like the quality level is like super high because I thought I really felt like I had this feeling they were really gonna phone in the film, but if they're coming out of the gate like that, I was like, wow, that was really good, and Emma Watson, I immediately right away I was like, yes,
she's wonderful.
I'm in. I mean, I wasn't.
I'm not a Beauty and the Beast fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I never have been. I mean, I have nothing against it. It's just never been my favorite movie. Belle has never been my favorite princess. You know, I'm very about Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, so you were kind of similar to me then.
Yeah. That being said, I'm still going to see the live action. You know, I see all the live action movies, so why wouldn't I? But what I've seen, like previews and stuff like that, looks so pretty. And uh-oh. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm all about the visuals. You know, Cinderella, I couldn't have cared less what the story was when I went to go see it. It was so pretty. So I feel the same way about Beauty and the Beast. It looks so pretty. And hearing you say that after seeing the preview, I'm sold now.
Yeah. Now, visually, it was stunning too. So, I mean, I would say that was. It just came together. You're just like, even thinking about that scene animated, like it's fun to see it, but just seeing it in like live action, the way that they shot it and everything looks like real and lived in far away. So it's almost like taking, but the production value is like those of like those old classic musicals. So it's like taking that, it's like mixing the old with the new and creating something that has never really existed before as far as musicals go. I mean, probably a lot of film musicals, as it were. I mean, probably, I'm sure Into the Woods was pretty close with that, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen the whole movie yet, so this is just my review of the, the extended preview. But there was something about that scene that was just captivating to me. Like I really enjoyed it. And even Josh Gad, who's playing LeFou, he had a few spoken lines in the midst of the musical number that made me laugh, you know. And it's, and just in case anyone knows that he also does Olaf in Frozen.
I love him.
Which most of the things that Olaf said, which that are funny, were Josh Gad ad-libbing. That weren't in the script. So I'm sure, I don't know, but I imagine that whatever he said that made me laugh was probably... I would think it's ad-libbed, but this scene was so tight that there's no room for ad-libbing. Like, it is just like... It is filmmaking perfection. It was a really good scene, and it wasn't dark or creepy. It was, it's the opening scene in the village. Like, it was.
Well, that's high praise coming from you.
Yeah, I'm my interest in seeing the film has been piqued. You know, before I was like, maybe the scene before this, I was like, maybe the scene where Gaston goes after the beast will be fun. That was what I was looking forward to the most, because that's going to be like intense and dark and
the
scary.
The darkest one. That'll be the darkest part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, let's see it. Let's see how they do that one. You know, let's see how dark it gets. That's kind of that was pretty much all I was looking forward to. But I think this is going to be an enjoyable ride. So that's my review of the extended preview.
Right on.
And yeah. So, but now we're gonna see where this all came from here, and you know, in our dark origins thing here. And one thing that is pretty interesting is, so we've done Snow White,
mm-hmm.
and we've done The Little Mermaid,
mm-hmm.
which are very, very dark. The original versions,
yes.
The originals
are dark. This one, not so much.
Well, the thing about it is like. The reality of it is that the story itself is actually pretty dark. Like the story that we're familiar with, it's kind of a dark story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never really thought about this one as a dark story, I guess. Huh. I did not know that about myself.
Wow, you have some revelations here. So you think holding a girl captive and forcing them to love them is not a dark premise?
But he didn't force her to love him, right? Like, it's specifically in the version that we know.
Right.
You know, he didn't force her to love him. He wasn't, you know, really trying. Obviously, the candlestick and the teapot were trying. But and the wardrobe, dude, that lady needs to mind her business. But
well, I mean, I think they all just didn't want to be inanimate objects anymore.
Right, and that like that's a good motivator. Right. Like, it's a really good motivator. I don't think I want to be a teapot forever. Like that makes sense to me. But like I never, especially in our version, in our Disney version that we got, I never felt like the Beast forced her to do anything. Hmm. You know what I mean? He did say, okay, you have to stay here, and he threw her in a dungeon, but that only lasted for, like, maybe an hour or so. You know, it didn't even seem like she was in there overnight before he was like, oh, my bad, here, you know, have a bedroom. Like, you know, I don't know, and I never really thought of it as dark because it always seemed kind of kicked back, and, like, they were just friends, you know, like... I don't know.
Kick back. Wow, you're throwing some North Cal slang. That film was totally kick back, man. It was it was hella kick back.
Like, he got mad at her dad. Okay, you know, cool. And was like, dude, don't touch my stuff. And so, you know, and then she showed up and he was like, well, he can go, but you have to stay. And she agreed to that. Like, she didn't have to agree to that. So...
No, she willingly did it so her father wouldn't have to stay there.
Yeah, she could have left. She could have walked away.
Yeah, like, but you know, but sort of, but you know, but she did it because she didn't want her father to be there. But she didn't want to be there.
I'm just saying, like, she had a choice. So, it's not like he kidnapped her.
No, all right, I'll give you that. Beast did not kidnap Belle.
You know, and when she decided that she wanted to leave, he was like, "All right, go on." You know, get out of here. Make sure you come back, but go on. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm, like I said, I'm pretty blah about this movie. Like, it never impressed me, and I never really gave it much thought. The only thing I've really thought about when it comes to Beauty and the Beast is how old the Beast was when that witch cursed him. Like, that's the only thing I've ever given any thought to.
Which she had to been, how old was that? How old was he in the movie?
He was turning 21.
So he was 11 or 10 years old.
Yeah. He was like 10 or 11 years old, which is like, can I say, I can't say that. hold on. I'll find a clean way to say this. That's a really messed up move. Okay. That's a really messed up move because you're an ugly old hag. And you came to the door and a little kid answered it and wouldn't let you in his house because his parents weren't home. And you had to go and get all like medieval on him. Like, that's just messed up. Who's the villain here? You know,
who's like, the villain here? That's a recurring theme when people talk about this movie. I've heard some arguments that Gaston, even though he's, you know, kind of dumb and slow and arrogant, that his actions are those that are typically the hero in this type of film.
What?
Yeah, I've heard that.
But you don't believe that. Because if you do, we're not friends anymore.
I was getting heated. This is the thing. I'm not taking a stance on it either way. Because I could see what they're saying, but clearly, the bad of Gaston outweighs the good.
if you take it as a straight up fairy tale rescuing the damsel in distress from the monster, then yes, Gaston has the hero role, 100%.
Right, that's kind of what I'm getting at there.
Yes, totally. No, I'm totally 100% down. But the reality is that the beast isn't the bad guy. He's actually totally a victim, and the two bad guys in the movie are the old hag and Gaston, because F that guy. Jerk.
Oh, Gaston. So, anyways, there's so many hot button issues that this film like stirs up. I mean, even the ones that are going on right now about LeFou's character being gay in the new film. There's just like... it's interesting. What's really interesting is that this original story is from, was the first year it was published, 1740?
Yeah.
So there's got to be something to it that we're still talking about it so long afterwards. Although
it was published in 1740, but according to the research that we did for this show, there are people that say the story originated over 4,000 years ago.
Yeah, so that's...
So that's a hell of a story to still be talking about. You know, apparently people really like to talk about girls having relationships with animals.
If you get anything from this episode... Just that, what Roxy just said, that should be your takeaway.
That's right. That's the takeaway. People like to talk about girls having relationships with animals.
Well, I do want to circle back, though, when you were saying about, you know, the prince answering the door and not wanting to let the old hag in. I think isn't that what children are taught, like not to let strangers in their house?
Yes. That is what children are taught, okay? His parents were out of town. And it was a dark and stormy night. And this very scary looking old woman came to his door and basically insisted that he let her in. Not only that, he's royalty. Okay, you don't just let anyone into your castle. That's not how the world works. You know?
Sure. Why was he answering the door, by the way, too? I mean,
I don't know. I never got that part. That didn't make any sense to me. Isn't it like Cogsworth's job to open the door?
Right.
But I don't know, maybe he was in the can. Who knows? But anyway, he did exactly what he should have done. He looked at this stranger who looked scary and was a stranger, again, stranger, and was not royalty, and was like, no, I'm sorry, ma'am. I can't let you into my house. That's not what I'm supposed to do. And she cursed him.
So that's what happens in the Disney version. But I think it's time for us to take a look at the original source here and get into that. Before you know that, why don't we take a few steps back and start at the actual beginning, because it's really interesting that the family and the backstory of Beauty, which is her original name, because Belle is Beauty in French. that she kind of comes from a little bit of a different background, a little Cinderella-esque.
Yeah, the original story is very Cinderella-esque. Now we shouldn't say the original story, though. So, okay.
It's not yet.
All right, I'm going to drop some knowledge on y'all. There are two so-called, like, original, air quotes, versions of Beauty and the Beast story, okay? And one is the actual original one, and one is the one that was rewritten a bit later, and it's the one that we really know.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, all of these people have very French names, and I'm really bad about it, so we're going to go with first names.
All right.
Okay. So, French novelist Gabrielle Suzanne wrote and published in 1740, like James was talking about, the first version of Beauty and the Beast, like the first modern version of Beauty and the Beast, right?
Okay.
And then this other lady, and it was really long, and then this other lady, Jean Marie, took it, and in 1756, so 16 years later, she abridged it and rewrote it and put it out again. So there's two versions, and one of them was super long and, from what else I could find, kind of boring. it was written by Gabrielle. So then Jean Marie went and rewrote it, and that's kind of the one that we know. That's the one that was really popular. But then Disney went and made their version and actually took a lot of the stuff that Gabrielle had written in her original one that was taken out. So it was like when our parents were kids, the version that they knew, like was told in storybooks, was probably Gabrielle's version. But because of the Disney one, the version that we knew, or it was Jean Marie's version.
Right.
Because of Disney, the one that we knew was closer to Gabrielle's version.
But another thing, too, another thing that I was informed by Creepy Kingdom contributor Derek Tatum is that a lot of what kind of got into the Disney film was inspired by the 1946 live-action French film Le Belle et la, la Bête. I said that pretty good.
I think you did.
I'm assuming that I pronounced Bête right. Or Bête.
Bête.
Le Belle.
Like Bête.
Yeah.
Le Belle et la Bête.
I took one semester of French, and my professor gave me a D, but I really deserved an F. And the only reason that she gave me a D is because she knew that I was trying my absolute hardest. She actually agreed to meet with me outside of class to tutor me, like, free of charge, because I was struggling so much.
You poor thing.
Like, French and me were not connecting. I really wanted to. I was like, I'm going to speak French just for a gag. You know, I don't know. Just because who would expect me to just start talking French to people?
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, that was a while back. Well. Maybe I'll get another go. But I'm all inspired now that I said the name of the film right. Anyway, so a lot of what's in that film, which I'm actually eager to watch. I tried to watch it beforehand, but I didn't have access to it. Looks like a pretty dark and creepy, surreal film. I watched the trailer, and it was pretty incredible. Yeah, I didn't really know too much about it until Derek brought it up to me. But so he said that that's where the talking dishware came from. That film that wasn't in any of the earlier versions.
Yeah, that. And that was obviously based on Gabrielle's. Hers was the very first one, and it was way more, fantasy than Jean Marie's version. So yeah, talking dishes were actually in the original one, not in the so-called popular one. And by popular, I mean like in the 1800s, y'all, like not in the 90s.
Right. So. All right, so let's hear about where we start this journey.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the Roxy version of the Jean Marie story from 1756.
Wow, so this is like the third adaptation. No, it's not the third, it's probably the 100th, the Roxy adaptation.
Here we go. Okay. A wealthy widowed merchant, as James said, lives in a mansion with his 6 children, 3 sons and 3 daughters. All his daughters are beautiful, but the youngest, Beauty, is the most lovely, obviously, because they named her Beauty. Like, can you imagine if she grew up to be ugly? That would suck.
Yeah, that'd be a rough ride.
So, her 2 older sisters, they were pretty, but they were wicked, selfish, vain, and spoiled. Is anyone getting kind of a Cinderella vibe from this? They secretly taunted her and treated her more like a servant than a sister. You know, the merchant eventually loses all of his wealth in some big storm at sea, and his children are forced to go live in a small farmhouse. So they started out nice and wealthy, and we got 2 sisters who were mean and 1 sister who was really nice and really pretty, and then they had to go work in a farmhouse because they were broke.
I mean, so when did Cinderella's a French story too, right?
Yes, it is.
I feel like there was some, some plagiarism. Yeah.
Right?
Or did every French story start out that way? Was that like a standard?
Maybe. And also, obviously, they don't have a mom.
Right. That's right. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. French stories. And you got 2 mean sisters and no mom. Okay. So they're living at this farmhouse for a while, and it kind of sucks. And then the merchant hears that one of the trade ships that he had sent off escaped destruction. So he returns to the city to discover whether there's anything valuable in it. And before leaving, he asks his children if they want any gifts. The boys ask for weaponry and horses and like hunting stuff. Mm-hmm. The 2 older daughters ask for clothing, jewels, pretty dresses, that kind of stuff, because they want their nice things back.
Right.
And Beauty wants a rose because roses do not grow in their part of the country. That's all she wants.
Okay, so we're getting a little connection there to the
Disney version. Okay, here we go. Okay. So he goes to the city, and he finds that his ship's cargo has all been seized to pay his debts, so he is still broke and cannot buy any presents. So he heads back home, and he becomes lost in the forest during a storm. He finds a palace, and he enters it because, you know, he needs shelter. A hidden figure opens the giant doors and silently invites him in, and this all starts to sound pretty familiar. He finds tables with food and drink that have been left for him, and so he eats, and he spends the night there, and the storm passes, and the next morning he's going to leave. He sees a rose garden, and he remembers that Beauty wanted a rose, so he picked one as he was leaving, and this hideous beast jumps out and tells him that for taking his most precious possession after accepting his hospitality, the merchant has to die.
All right. Well, that's...
That, extreme.
Yeah. It's like, here, take the rose back, bro.
Right? That is super extreme. Apparently, roses mean a lot to the... I mean, maybe, like... I don't know. Maybe he had won, like, the last few years of, like, the Home and Garden...
Yeah.
Competition town or something. I don't know. But roses were his prized possession, and so merchant has to die because he picked a rose. So the merchant begs him to set him free, arguing that he picked the rose as a gift for his youngest daughter. And the beast is like, oh, well, in that case, you can go give the rose to your daughter, but one of your daughters has to return or you have to come back.
So this is the part I find pretty interesting. So he's like, you can leave. I'm not going to kill you anymore. So you can... What?
I offense picking a rose.
Sorry, a rose. So not only can you leave and I'm not going to kill you, you could take the thing that I was going to kill you for and then pinky swear, you know, honor system. Why don't you come on back? But if you feel like you're not up for it, yeah, one of your daughters could come too. Like, wouldn't you just be like, sure, you got it, buddy, and then never, like, come back?
Right? What's the beast going to do? Come into town and get you? Like, hello?
Right.
And, like, again, okay, no one knows about this beast, okay? So this is another thing that I always thought when I watched the movie. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this castle is within walking distance of this town, this farm, this whatever, where... Right. Maurice and his daughters live, right? So, but no one knows about the beast. No one knows about the enchanted castle, and no one knows about the beast. So obviously he doesn't come out much. He's not a real public person. Right. So like, if you don't want to come back, just don't come back. What's he going to do? Walk into town and look for you? Like,
and even if that did happen, you know, maybe he had a good extra few weeks of life. I don't know.
Right?
You know, we all got to, you know, if you got to roll the dice, you know, I'd say the best option is to not come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure I would want to go back somewhere where someone is so picky about their roses. But all right. So the merchant, he's upset, but he accepts the condition, and the beast sends him on his way with, okay, the beast sends him on his way with wealth, jewels, and fine clothes for his sons and daughters, and stresses that Beauty must never know about his deal.
What is the deal?
He went from, I'm going to kill you from picking a rose, to have all of this money and these clothes and all of these gifts for your children. Just send me back your youngest.
And Maurice is like, sure.
All right. And like, admittedly, you know, the way the world was back then, really, women weren't worth a whole lot. So that's actually the most believable part here, is that some dude would trade his youngest daughter for like a bunch of riches.
Or worth a hell of a lot based on what, like, value wise, based on that.
So the merchant goes home and he tries to hide the secret, but Beauty pries it from him, and her brothers say they'll go to the castle and fight the beast. But the merchant is like, nope, you stand no chance against this monster. And so Beauty's like, all right, I'll go. That's fine. So she takes off and she goes to the castle. And when she gets there, the beast receives her graciously and informs her that she is now mistress of the castle and he is her servant.
That's a interesting twist.
Right? I bet she was not expecting that at all.
So at that case, whatever was going on in her life before then, it seems like a pretty large upgrade.
Right? She went from her sisters being super, super mean to her just because she was prettier than them and like basically being Cinderella to all of a sudden being mistress of this castle. And
I get a castle and a beast servant? Awesome.
Right? Cool. So he gives her lavish clothing. He feeds her great. They carry on lengthy conversations, you know, like hanging out. But every night the beast asks Beauty to marry him. And every time she turns him down, which I guess he doesn't get that mad because she's still there night after night. So it must be like a really, hey, are you going to marry me now? Nah, dude. Yeah. I'll see you at breakfast. Like, it's got to be that kind of thing.
That's like conversations you and I have.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm constantly asking. So, you're like, nah, dude.
After each refusal, you know, they go to bed, and Beauty dreams of a handsome prince who pleads with her to answer why she keeps refusing him. And she replies that she can't marry the beast because she loves him only as a friend. So she's there in this castle. She's the mistress of the castle. Her and the beast have become, you know, really good friends. Obviously they're having a good old time, good life, but she's not in love with him. She loves him, but she's not in love with him. So she's not going to marry him.
So the beast is total friend zone is what you're saying.
Yeah. She friend zoned him, which I mean, he's, you know, that's good because if not, it's bestiality. And
well, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
I'm sorry, but it's true. Like,
it's
yes,
true,
friend
true, true bestiality. It's a real
okay?
beast.
Like, you should be friend zoned, okay? Your dog is your best friend. The dude, she's a good girl, okay? But apparently she's not real smart because she doesn't make the connection between the handsome prince and the beast. And she becomes convinced that the beast is holding the prince somewhere captive in the castle.
Now, let's take a step back here. So the prince that she dreamed up in her head, mm-hmm. She believes that she had this dream because this prince is real and a prisoner in the castle. So she thinks she's like telepathic or something. Is that?
Well, and either way you look at it, there's some kind of psychic connection going on because right. Either the beast is like some sort of telepath and is projecting himself as a prince,
right,
like
right,
into
right.
her dreams, mm-hmm. Or she thinks that, like, she's a telepath and she's hearing someone else hidden throughout the castle. Like, it's one of the two. But somewhere there's some brain power going on.
Right, okay. All right, I was picking up on it.
So she searches all over and she discovers all kinds of enchanted rooms, but never the prince from her dreams. So for several months, Beauty lives a life of luxury at the Beast's palace, having every whim catered to by invisible servants with no end of riches to amuse her and an endless supply of exquisite finery to wear.
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds fabulous.
I'll sign up for that too.
Beast me up, okay? Eventually, she becomes homesick and begs the Beast to allow her to go home to see her family. He says yes, on the condition that she returns exactly a week later.
Again. Why can't she get invite everybody over? It's her, you know.
I don't know. Although, maybe he's scared. You know, I mean, he is technically like a monster. So maybe he's scared that she invites her brothers over. They're going to attack him. Like, and I'm sure she told him all the bad things that her sisters like did to her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
you know,
he's like, I don't want those people in my house.
Yeah. I don't want your crappy family in my house. Like, but also my argument would have been, why do you want to go home?
Well, the other thing I thought about too is like, basically, as soon as she shows up, it's kind of like, yo, this is your place now, whatever, you know, you're running the show. But she's not really, because she can't come and go as she pleases.
No, James, this was written in the 1700s. That's unacceptable.
What, come and go as you please is unacceptable?
Yeah. No, women can't be in charge.
I know, but he made her in charge.
But he's
insinuating, you're the mistress, I'm your servant, whatever you want, you know, live it up. But you can't leave.
he's a man. He still has to have some kind of control over her.
All right. But what happens? What if he does leave? What if she does leave? I mean, what were the consequences?
I have no idea. Again, what's he going to do? Go after her? Like, he doesn't leave the castle. So, all right. So he says that she can go and that she has to come back in a week, and he gives her a magic mirror and a ring. The mirror allows her to see the Beast, and the ring, when turned three times, allows her to return instantly to the castle.
So that's cool. That's cool that you get the introduction of the mirror that even made its way into the Disney version. That's true. Mm.
So she goes home, and her older sisters are surprised to find her well-fed and dressed in finery and all of that, because they think that she's, like, you know, living in a dungeon. And she tries to share her gowns and her jewels that the Beast gave her with her sisters, but when she hands them to her sisters, they turn to rags. And when they give them back to Beauty, they turn back into, like, awesome things, because the Beast meant them only for her. That's also fabulous. That's a big, like, to her sisters for being mean. And so her sisters are super envious when they hear of her life at the castle. And hearing that she has to go back in a week, they beg her to stay another day. And they even put onion in their eyes to make it appear as though they're crying and they're really sad and
that's
miss
hilarious.
Her.
I love that.
But really, they're just hoping that the Beast will be angry with her for breaking her promise and eat her.
Wow.
That's their plan. If they pretend to be sad and she stays with them, then she'll make the Beast angry and maybe he'll eat her alive.
That's a pretty good plan.
These girls are horrible.
I was just saying.
You know what? I'm just naming them Anastasia and Drusilla.
I want to say right now that so far out of this entire story, these are my favorite characters.
Of course they are.
I mean, the description of wicked, selfish, vain, and spoiled. And then they put onions in their eyes because they're so soulless and emotionless that they couldn't even actually think of something sad.
I'm down with the whole, like, wicked, vain, selfish, and all of that. But girls, come up with a better plan. Be like, oh my God, we miss you so much. We should come with you. Right. You know? Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on. Well, Nobody needs to be eaten alive. That's just ridiculous. So, but Beauty, because again, we're going to go with she's not so smart. Her heart is moved by her sister's false show of love, and she agrees to stay. So she begins to feel guilty about breaking her promise to the Beast, and she uses the mirror to see him back at the castle and is horrified to discover that he is laying half dead from heartbreak near the rose bushes her father had stolen from, and she immediately uses the ring to return to the Beast.
All right, well, let's pause for a sec. So the tie to the Disney version with this is that, you know, once the last rose petal falls, then he's will be a beast forever, except he finds love. So that's a very interesting twist. In this one, they're like, you stole my favorite rose. And, you know, but then I forgave you, but sort of whatever, all that stuff. But then you took off, and the heartache, which is not a physical thing, you know, sucked the life out of him that he's on life support near the rose. So it was interesting how they took that concept and made it. I think Disney made it better as far as that one goes.
I do too. I really do. Because, like, I mean, he really, really liked her. And that's the consequence for her not going back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least he didn't tell her that, though. At least he didn't tell her, if you don't come back in a week, I'll kill myself. Like, at least he's not all emo about it.
No, he did not guilt her into coming back.
But he loved her so much, and he thought that, you know, I mean, she was 5 minutes late for dinner, and he thought she wasn't coming back, and so he laid down by the rose bush to just die because, you know, she was a little bit late.
That's so overdramatic. I mean, it
seems dramatic to me, yeah. But all right, so she uses the ring, and she goes back to the castle, and she throws herself down and starts weeping over the Beast and says that she loves him. And when her, because we all know that you don't know that you love somebody until you see them die. Like, you know. When her tears strike him, the Beast is transformed into the handsome prince from her dreams. He informs her that long ago a fairy turned him into a hideous beast after he refused to let her in from the rain, and that only by finding true love, despite his ugliness, could the curse be broken. He and Beauty are married, and they live happily ever after.
Now, what's interesting about that is that there's nothing that insinuate that that's going to happen at all throughout this entire story. It's almost like they at the end when they were writing it, were like, how do we get out of this? Fairy.
Yeah. So that is Jean Marie's version. That is the secondary version of the French version of Beauty and the Beast. I feel like because Jean Marie like took it and revised it and tried to make it like simpler and shorter and whatnot, that maybe she left out some like important plot pieces.
Right. There's no foreshadowing going on.
But all right, you go, girl. Do your thing.
Well,
so yeah,
that's what the people needed at the time.
Right. It was like 1756, so I guess they needed that. Well, going back to Gabrielle's version in 1740, the first one, it's basically the same. So in Gabrielle's original version, there are several elements that Jean Marie's doesn't have. Mainly the backstory of both Beauty and the Beast are given in Gabrielle's version. The Beast was a prince who lost his father at a young age, and his mother had to wage war to defend the kingdom. The queen left him in the care of an evil fairy who tried to seduce him when he became an adult. When he refused, she transformed him into a beast.
That, to me,
makes so much more sense than an old hag cursing him because he wouldn't let her in the house.
Right. I mean, yeah. And also, they're kind of stereotyping old hags here. I mean, in the Disney version. Not all of them can have all this power to do harm to everyone. Some old hags are just old hags.
And hey, this didn't say that she was old or ugly or anything like that. This just says an evil fairy. For all we know, that's Maleficent.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, Maleficent, look at that. We just typed Sleeping Beauty in.
There we go. Maleficent is not an old hag. She's a foxy lady.
Yes.
Green so, skin yeah, or not. So
the king died and the queen had to go to war. And she left him in the care of a fairy who, okay, turns out to be evil. We don't know if the queen knew that or not. But the kid grew up, and then the fairy tried to seduce him, and he was like, nah, friend zoned. And she got mad and turned him into a beast. And he was like, no, you're my nanny. Like, this is not happening. And she got angry. Like, that story makes so much more sense to me than the one that we ended up getting. You know?
Yeah. I mean, already it's You're already in it. You can see the motivation. You're not kind of like, oh, that's weird. Why did they do that? You know, but just those brief description you just said.
Yeah, it makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So Beauty's backstory is that she's not really a merchant's daughter, but she's the offspring of a king and a good fairy. A wicked fairy, or the wicked fairy, I don't know if it's the same one, because I don't know. The prince is left with an evil fairy. This is a wicked fairy. I don't know if they're the same
I think this is a different one. I think, you know.
I think it's different. I think the evil and the wicked are two different ones. So a wicked fairy had tried to murder Beauty so that she could marry her father, the king.
Right.
Okay, I don't really understand that. Why would you murder, like, the little girl so you could marry the father? That isn't really – I don't know.
This is a brief description. Maybe Beauty was like, you know, I don't want you to remarry because, you know.
Maybe.
You know, because mom was awesome. I don't know.
Okay. So, all right. So a wicked fairy tries to murder Beauty because she wants to marry the king. And Beauty is taken out of the palace and put in the place of the merchant's dead daughter for her own protection.
That's pretty dark.
That also sounds very familiar with the evil fairy coming and, you know, trying to do something bad to the little princess. And the little princess has to be taken out of the castle and,
yeah, you know. Some Sleeping Beauty action there, yeah.
Very Sleeping Beauty, yep. So far, Maleficent could be either one of these characters. Like,
wow.
You know, totally down for that.
And just to take a moment here, it's kind of like, I think that would be an interesting twist. I mean, I doubt that's in a live action film, but what if Maleficent is in the beginning?
That would totally be an interesting twist. Like that she's not really Maurice's daughter, or, you know, whatever the name is of the merchant or the inventor or whatever you want to say. No. His daughter died. And they were like, oh, cool. Take care of ours. Just protect her.
Yeah, that's weird. But he's like, yeah, all right. I got nothing else to do, I guess.
I guess so. Yes, Your Majesty. Like,
all right, come on.
Gabrielle also gave the castle elaborate magic, which obscured the more vital pieces of it. I don't know what that means, but she made the castle magic, which is again where the idea for the like the talking dishes and all of that came from. That was in the original version of the story. Jean Marie, she got rid of a bunch of the characters. She simplified the tale to just like the base simplicity of a fairy tale.
I mean, you know, as we're analyzing this to death here, because that's what we do, you know, like it's kind of like you could see, you know, like I said, you could see maybe why they simplified it. You know, it is just the wrong time for people just wanted a simple story. And sometimes a lot of people like stories that just kind of have a happy ending and don't really make sense. You know, I get into those type of debates with those type of people all the time. You know, like people that like rom-coms or something. Like, you know, you start arguing you know, the reality of rom-coms with somebody that enjoys them. They're like, I don't care. I just like it.
Yeah, well, it's that suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're just okay with whatever the story is because it makes you happy. It makes you feel good.
Right.
Cool.
And you're like, why do you need to rationalize this?
Yeah, and then you have us that really want to know why an 11-year-old boy was punished so badly.
By an old hag. Those old hags.
Old hags, dude. Disney does not like them old hags. So, yes, those are the origins of Beauty and the Beast. And, like, again, you know, with Snow White and with The Little Mermaid, you know, the origins were way darker than the Disney version. And in this case, not really so much.
Not so much. I mean, a little bit more interesting, maybe, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. As far as the Gabrielle version. I forgot her name for a sec. As far as the Gabrielle, you know, like, I would actually like to explore this version more, you know? Like, I'd like to see a little bit more of, you know, I like this more fantastic version.
Me too. I actually wonder, I'm going to look up if they ever translated that original story to English. Let's see what I can find. Oh, yes. Yes, they did. Hey, look at that. It's on Amazon.
All right. Well, send me the link so I can put it in the show notes for if people want to go down that rabbit hole.
I might get this. It's only $1.99 if you get it on Kindle. I might get this and read this because this version with the backstory of the beast and with Beauty being a fairy and all of that, that sounds really cool to me.
Yeah, I think we'll. Yeah, well, I mean, we're not going to dive into it on the show, but I don't think we need to keep going on about Beauty and the Beast. But, but it's you know, there's been so, that's the thing. This story is so old, as we've said. There's been so many adaptations, but I think the thing I want to explore is, you know, is also the film I told you about, the 46th film. After watching the trailer, I think that'd be really a creepy, interesting.
I'll bet that's the creepiest one of them all.
Yeah. I think so.
You know, a lot of the films that were made back then just have these really dark, weird, like, twists to them. So I'll bet that's the creepiest one out of all of them.
Especially since it has the tea-ware being alive and in 1946 special effects. That'd be creepy as it is. But so, well, you know, now you know a little bit more. Maybe at this point, you've seen the new film, or you haven't, or you're getting ready to. But as of right now, we haven't seen it. So I'm really interested to see. I mean, I'd have to imagine it's going to be pretty close to the 91 film as far as story goes. But I do think that they're going to probably try to throw some curveballs in there as far as the story goes.
Maybe they'll bring back some of the original elements. That would be cool.
Yeah, probably not that much, because if they went that deep, people would not be connecting it to the animated film, that's what they're trying to do.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. But I'm telling you, this movie, specifically the Disney animated version, brings on the same topics of discussion over and over and over again. You know, there's like three main topics of discussion, and one of them, of course, is the age of the prince and that whole thing. And I feel like if maybe they just addressed that in the live action one, like, I would be, I'd be happy. I'd be fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, also there's a film, there's a French film that wasn't that long ago. It was from 2014. A French-German film. Excuse me. And I actually feel like I might, if we're going to keep going down the Beauty and the Beast rabbit hole, I might actually watch that one as well, because that one's supposed to be a modern version of the 46 film.
Neat.
So find a subtitled version of that. But, yeah, I, and, with, and I, And I also thought about, you know, about Disney making live action films. And I'm starting to kind of get why they're doing it. Besides, it's like, you know, a sure thing, I guess. That's probably why
money,
they're like,
money.
You know, there's that. But I also I also started realizing, like, if they don't make these films live action, other people, other studios are. Because they already started trying to do it.
Yeah, with that Little Mermaid movie that's about to come out.
Yeah, that's a Universal movie. And Disney's doing a live action Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing about taking all these stories that you don't own, that anybody can make movies about.
Yep.
You know, so it's interesting how all these stories have just lasted the test of time, being retold over and over again, you know. And there's going to be a whole generation of children that they're just going to know this live action Beauty and the Beast, you know. Like,
yeah, it is really cool though. You know, the world changes so much, like so much, but fairy tales, they endure. Every generation reads the same fairy tales over and over and over again, and really with not much changing.
No.
Like, that's pretty cool.
So, you know, hats off to them for telling stories that we're still talking about here on a podcast.
Yes. Gabrielle, you go girl. Hans Christian Andersen, those Grimm brothers. Good job.
So, yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Whenever we do these, we always get like a flood of requests for other ones. Like, people really enjoy them. So, I mean, I'm sure we're just going to keep going with these.
Yes. Tell us what you want. What would you like to hear the Roxy version?
So the Roxy version? No, it's the Dark Origin. It's the... I mean, the final conclusion, like we said, the origins weren't really that dark. I still think that this is kind of a dark story. I could get why you don't, because it's, you know, it's not everything seemed to be, you know, there was no one's forcing anyone to do anything, I guess, even though I said that freely. But
it is weird. No, you're right. I think it just depends on how you look at it. It definitely could have dark elements, or it could not. I don't know. It's a weird story.
I'll say this. It has to be a dark story in some elements, because at the Be Our Guest restaurant at the Magic Kingdom, you could eat in the West Wing, which is pretty much the closest that you would get to be able to eat in the Haunted Mansion. Because it's dark and creepy in there, and lightning flashes, and things are, you know, the portraits all ripped from when the Beast had a temper tantrum. We skipped over that when we talked about it.
Hey, if you hadn't talked to any people other than your servants who were teapots since you were 11 years old, you probably have a bad temper too.
All right.
I would.
You're right. And now, all right, on that note, let's wrap this up. All right, Roxy, what is your home address and phone number?
I live at... you can find me on Instagram at Roxy_Tart or on Facebook, Welcome to Roxy's World.
All right, I'll find you there. You better be there when I go.
I will be. I will be waiting for you.
All right.
Welcome to Disneyland.
You'll be waiting. And although, never mind. I was going to reference something we talked about in another podcast. I thought it was this episode, but it was the one recorded.
Oh, me too. Yeah, you're right. That joke did not play at all, because that was a totally different podcast. Oh, never mind.
All right. If you would like to contact us here at Creepy Kingdom, you can do so by sending us an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for the show notes, our videos, articles, links to all of our social media, to sign up for our mailing list, fill out our surveys, everything that you would possibly want to do with Creepy Kingdom, it can be found at creepykingdom.com. So as promised, it is now time to announce the winner of our survey contest. So at random, we randomly chose someone. We didn't choose them. It was from a random generator. You know, come on. We play by the rules here. And the winner of the contest that was randomly chosen is Adam Carroll. Congratulations, Adam. You win a $25 Disney gift card. To obtain your prize, please email us, creepykingdom@gmail.com, from the email address that you used to fill out your survey. And then we'll work out the details and get that gift card to you. You have until March 30th to do so. If you do not, then we will draw another name. Thanks again to everyone who entered our contest and filled out the survey, giving us this feedback on the show that we really appreciate, so that we know how to improve the show, what to do away with, and if some of the new ideas that we're working on are worthwhile or not. So thank you very much. Alrighty, well, until next time.
Keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.